Hey everyone, you're listening to Episode 5 of Superhero Speak. In this one, I sit down with artist Shane Moore, who is the co-founder of EMP Comics. He's also the artist on The Omens. I also wanted to let everyone know that Ben and I just attended the 2013 ECBOC, which is the East Coast Black Age Comic Book Convention. While there, we saw the Glyph Awards, and then we sat down with writer Eric Cooper, who is the creator of Nightseeker. Also, on the following day, I went with my son, and I got about 6 really great interviews. Both those episodes will be hitting right after this one. But, in the meantime, back to Shane. He's someone I met about 4 years ago at a convention and was a volunteer just like me. Next thing I know, 2 years later, I see him at a convention, and the guy has his own table, selling his own book. To me, that was really cool, so I had to get him on the show. And here we go. So, wow, we haven't really talked in like 2 years.
Yeah.
And, I was thinking, we met, was it 4 years ago? 2009?
Yeah, it was that Wizard, convention, what, Big Apple Con?
Yeah, it was Big Apple Con at the Pier.
Mm-hmm.
And,
and I think I saw you like the next one when I had a table.
Right, yeah, I mean, it's funny because, for the people listening to this, yeah, when we met, I just thought you were another volunteer. I mean, I do remember you mentioning something about, you know, being an artist, and then I see you a year later, and it's like, you're not a volunteer, you have a table, you're selling books.
Well, I was a volunteer at the time. I guess, the only real difference was I wasn't finished with my comic book. And, and the main reason I was a volunteer is because I was so broke at the time that I wanted a way to get into that convention, and volunteering got you in for free, so.
Oh, okay. There's an interesting twist.
But, you know, things change like a year later. I had a job and a comic book, so.
So how did that journey begin? Like, where did... You know, I was looking on your website, and Larry is your partner,
yeah.
And it's you're the artist, he's the writer, I guess?
Yeah, we actually, I guess it goes back to, like, almost 1994 when we were in school together.
Okay.
I'm originally from West Virginia,
mm-hmm.
And I met Larry in a drawing class, and we both were... It was a state college. We were both there taking art classes, and we both loved comic books. And we always talked about creating our own comic, and we gave it a couple tries. We did a book called The Fairmont Five, and it was very, like, a small run, like, black and white copies. Mm-hmm. We went to very small conventions with that. That was in the late 90s. Then I moved... off to Savannah, Georgia. Larry got married, and I started a family, and I went to graduate school, so things kind of, we put things on hold. But it was always something we kept up, and it was always something we talked about wanting to, like, come back to. And finally, somewhere in between everything, you know, we were just looking through old paperwork and old drawings and old ideas, and we finally decided that the time was right, and we did The Omens together. He had been working on a book called The Believer,
mm-hmm.
which I really liked. You know, to see your own work evolve is one thing, but to, like, see somebody that you're, like, close friends with, like, that, like, everything seemed right. Like, I love that book, and I love the book that we put together. So, you know, it did take a lot of time to get it right, but I feel like we really, you know, had something special.
Yeah, and I think there's a great part in that story where, you know, it's never too late also. You know, I mean, you guys separated for you know, 10 years or 10 years plus, but then you got back together and made it happen.
Yeah, really. I know one of the... one of the professors I had in school had kind of, he had said once that being an artist is almost the equivalent of like being an athlete. Like you can always train, you can always practice, and you get better. But at the same time, if you don't, it doesn't age the same way. Like you don't blow a knee out when you turn 40. You know, there's not quite that equivalent. So you actually can get better and better into your, you know, 60s or 70s, I hope. I'm not that old, but.
Not yet. It's funny. I think I never really looked at it that way. You know, cause I was always a musician. And it's just something that's always, I mean, I guess, yeah, if you're an athlete, it's always going to be part of you. But, like you said, it's not something with being an athlete, it's something that you can lose with age, but being a musician or an artist or a writer, you're always going to have that, you know?
And yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know if you could say like you lose your edge or something like that, but, or interest, like drawing Superman or Spider-Man. Like, I don't know if somebody wants to do that when they're in their 70s, but, you know.
Well, I mean, I guess if you're still passionate about it, too. I mean, that's,
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, with anything in the entertainment industry, if you're doing it for yourself at first, it's fun and it's exciting and it's great. But once you start becoming part of the bigger engine, you know, I imagine, you know, you become part of the industry, and you start having people telling you what to do, and, oh, you can't do this, you can't draw that, oh, you can't have the character do that, it won't sell enough books. You know, I could see people losing their passion that way.
I agree with you on that one. I don't know. I mean, I don't really have an interest in, you know, like writing or drawing like other people's characters. I like, you know, doing what I'm doing, you know, independently. So I hope that always stays fresh. And I guess, you know, when it comes down to it, like, if they're your own characters and I, you know, if you start to get tired or you need to move on, like, it's easier for you to do that than it's like a franchise character or something, but.
Right. Yeah. No. And that's another thing. I mean, you started your own press, Electromagnetic Press, which we haven't mentioned yet.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, you're the boss. You get to make the decisions.
I guess you could say the boss. I'm also like the only employee. So, you know, it's kind of me and Larry, together, you know. We would love to eventually, you know, publish other books by other people, but, you know, it's really hard. Like, you know, we don't make money off of comics.
Right.
It's cost a lot of money to do it, but I guess that's kind of what goes with like a passion. But, you know, to get somebody else that's interested in that too, like, I mean, it's, I don't want to sell myself short or anything, but it's really easy to do what I've done at the point that I'm at now, you know?
Right.
Like, it's very accessible for someone to create a comic book and self-publish a comic book, whether it's online or print. You know, I think you can get them printed by the issue now.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't like that, I guess, before the internet, but, you know, it's easy to do that. It's hard to get somebody to notice it or to get somebody to pay you to do that.
Right.
Let's say.
It's unfortunately the publishing industry just in general has been obviously suffering for a long time, in the comic book industry. But I do think, I don't know. I mean, I go to a lot of cons and there's a lot of young, hungry artists still out there that want to break into the business. It's just, you know, I kind of feel that it's something maybe missing right now is, you know, the power of the internet. People are networking together more and more that, you know, all these artists out there should all get together, you know, and just work over the internet together and publish together. You know, there's strength in numbers.
Sure.
You know, I don't know why. That's maybe something I don't understand at all about the artist mentality. I mean, is it difficult to get guys to jump on board with you, or?
Well, I kind of feel like, and I know we've had a couple of close calls. Like, I know a good friend of mine, we're going to be debuting a motion comic soon.
Mm-hmm.
And he had basically had it already done. But because he didn't really, he's coming from, you know, he loves comics, but he's not like, you know, I guess following the comic scene, kind of came from it at a different angle. So he had asked me if he could publish it under the EMP logo, and I said absolutely. But I kind of feel like, and that was a case where it was somebody that I knew, like mm-hmm. a good friend of mine. At conventions we've gone to, like, you know, we've openly sought out people that are interested in drawing or writing or, you know, or we've tried to help get people together and, like, you know, help them get books published. But when it comes down to it, if they had that drive, like, if they were able to do that, they probably would be doing that already without our help, you know?
Okay.
So, I mean, there are a lot of people with comic books now.
Right, right. Yeah. But I guess what I was trying to say is that, you know, if you're on your own and you're doing it, it's one thing. But if you're on your own, if you're doing it and you meet an artist in Philly and he's up here doing the same thing and he's got a book and people don't know maybe EMP from New York, but they know... you know, his comic here in Philly, well, if you guys work together, people go to the one website and say, oh, look, there's another book that looks interesting, you know, and that's what I'm saying, you know, if you find little local guys all across the country and network together, you know.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. There are a couple places that do that. I think there's, you know, like Pronto Comics, they kind of, like, you know, kind of conglomerate and, like, promote. And I know that, like, personally, like, all the artists that I've kind of met at conventions and had, like, even just, like, a semi-connection or just talked about their work or that I liked their work or they liked mine, like, if I connect with them on Facebook, I know that, if I have something, they'll, you know, like, if I post something, they'll share it.
Okay.
So, I, you know, I guess that is like an informal answer to the question you're asking, I think.
Yeah.
You know, but like, is it under some big conglomerate? No.
No.
You know.
No, it's just the power of Facebook at that point.
Yeah, which is, I guess that's a pretty powerful thing. Yeah.
I don't know, I'm still trying to figure out Twitter.
Oh, yeah. No, I know, a good friend of mine set up the website, and there's a lot of things on it. I was actually looking at that right before you called, like widgetizing, and
mm-hmm.
it's a lot to keep up with, you know.
Yeah.
I try to just draw, you know.
Do what makes you happy, right?
Right.
Actually, yeah, I guess it is, you know, con season's upon us. Is there any cons you're going to be at this year?
Well, I'm in the middle right now. To get off of the top of comic books, I just got married about 2 months ago.
Oh yeah, I saw the pictures of your program online, and I have to say it's probably the coolest wedding programs I've ever seen.
Oh, thank you. There were a few things that I really wanted to be a part of the wedding, and it certainly was. I would say top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
But that took a lot of time. Like, what, you know, wedding planning takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
Out of, you know, the drawing. So, my convention schedule has been pretty light lately. Right now I'm trying to get the second issue of The Omens finished.
Okay.
I think I've got about 5 pages left, but up until a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I haven't really had a whole lot of time to actually do it. You know, unfortunately, you know, when you don't make a living drawing comic books, you have what they call a day job, and they kind of want me to show up there every day.
And then you have acquaintances that say, hey, come on my podcast.
Right. No, no, that's no problem at all. Like, how is the podcast, by the way? I listened to a little bit. I know you guys were talking about the Superman trailer. I didn't,
It's going well. It's, what I'm actually, trying to do is get some shows recorded in the can so that we have, you know, breathing room to, because it kind of like, we sat around, it's two guys I work with that we decided to do this, and,
do you do this at work?
Yeah, we actually do.
Oh boy.
I actually have I work at
Are you admitting this? Like, your boss could be listening to this.
My boss knows that I do this at work.
Okay.
I work for a technology company, and they're very modern, very progressive. And it's very much the mentality of, as long as we get the work done, they don't care, you know, what we do in our spare time. And, so we were talking about it, and, you know, boom, we sat down one day and recorded, and, you know, threw together that website. I mean, it's just done with WordPress, and I found a theme that I liked and threw it together, and we put it out there. And, you know, I as I said, the power of Facebook, I just put a comment on my Facebook page, like, hey, check this out. And, you know, 120 people downloaded the first episode. I'm like, okay.
All right.
And then, you know, same, and then people kept hitting it. Now we're on iTunes, and we're getting a consistent flow going, and we actually recorded an episode today at work at lunchtime.
Was it the Iron Man episode?
No, unfortunately. And I and Ben saw Iron Man over the weekend. Our other co-host did not have an opportunity to go see it yet, so he has a homework assignment to try to see it this week so we can, you know.
Okay.
Get it out there while the movie's still on everyone's minds.
Yeah. All right. Well, I won't say anything then.
Oh, no, no. I mean, you know, did you enjoy it?
I liked it a lot. I kind of feel like I read that it was supposed to be better, as good as the Avengers or Iron Man 1, and, like, having seen it, like, I don't like to get really nitpicky about movies, especially comic book movies, because it's kind of counterproductive. But at the same time, I really, I like the movie, but I don't think I liked it better than the first Iron Man or the Avengers.
Well, you know it's funny. This is actually, and you'll hear this again. I'll repeat this when we record the podcast. But
are we doing spoilers?
We could do minor spoilers.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, keep going.
Actually, because I have an episode that will be posted this week, and then this will be posted the following week. Okay. So it'll have been in the theater for a week and a half, so I think spoilers are fine. But my gut reaction after watching it, in all honesty, was, wow, that was the best of the three. It was highly entertaining.
Yeah.
But then the next day, I was sitting and thinking about the movie, and I was like, well, as a comic book fan, I'm a little ticked off by some of the things they did in that movie, you know, and...
Are you talking about the Mandarin?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Okay. Because, honestly, like, as far as, like, a conversion to a movie, I feel like that's the best possible scenario we could have gotten.
Right, and it's funny, that's...
And I also found it hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. And I was laughing hysterically at that scene, like, along with everyone else. It's like, that was really good. And like I said, I was thoroughly entertained. And I actually saw an article, and I can't remember what website it was on, where they were talking about basically how the movie was marketed. And it was, you know, the marketing genius behind Marvel of the whole thing was a left turn or a left hook, you know, rope dope, because I went in there totally expecting a different movie, you know, expecting a good movie, but expecting something very different than, you know, especially with the Mandarin. All the way up to that point, I was still expecting that movie.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that was brilliant. I think it was maybe even better than they could have hoped for, you know, as far as like, like, it's an action movie, but it's also, like, a comedy at the same time.
Right.
And to have, like, this big twist, like, you know, I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, it felt along the lines, you know, in my opinion, of, like, the Indiana Jones style moves. I think all of them have, you know.
Right.
Where it's got action and comedy and, you know, a good story, and it just keeps you going the whole time.
There was a time during the movie where I thought it was a little too slapsticky, but I laughed at everything. You know, it wasn't like I stopped laughing because it was too funny.
Mm-hmm.
My only real critique was I felt like the whole, like, 47 Armors was kind of a generic version, almost like the armors in Iron Man 2. Like, I know they're all different, but, like, the fact that they didn't really have any screen time made it very plain.
Yeah.
And there was nothing really about any of those designs I was excited about. I think, like, in all those, and including the Avengers, there's always, like, a progression. Like, it evolves into, like, one final armor at the end, and I felt like if it would have gone past that gold armor into, like, something new, like, something, you know, he would progress into the next movie with, I feel like I would have personally felt a little bit better.
Right, but I think that's also part of why they showed all those armors. You know, with the way the movie ended, and trying not to give too much away, it felt like they could end it there. You know,
yeah, it
gave you a comfortable place to end the franchise. And so, in a way, it was kind of a nod to some of the designs through the years in the comic books. Like, the one armor that has the fins sticking up on the side, either sides of the helmet. I actually have a couple issues with that armor in it. You know, so it was like, oh, wow, when I saw this, like, oh, cool, I recognize that from the books I have. You know, so I think that's really what it was. It wasn't like, I mean, yeah, it was like, oh, let's do this really cool CGI with 47 Iron Man suits flying around. But at the same time, it was also like, let's give the fans something, all the ones who like all the different designs, and show them something similar along those lines, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. But, like, seeing those armors, like, for, like, 0.1 second on screen,
yeah,
you know, I personally would have rather they feature something a little bit more. Like, I can remember, like, in spite of, like, I didn't hate Iron Man 2, but I can remember thinking how cool, like, that suitcase armor was.
Yeah.
And that's because it really, you got to see it from beginning to end. And it was kind of like that scene in the Avengers 2 where, like the whatever block armor at the end, like, kind of, like, encapsulates him.
Right.
You know, I think, you know, it felt, like, very quick. Like, everything felt very quick. Like, or he had just a leg. He had one leg on and one arm on, or just the helmet, or, you know.
Yeah, and the whole, you know, there's a lot of things in the movie that felt rushed. You know, I mean, obviously this isn't a spoiler. Everyone knows that the Iron Patriot is in the movie, but it just kind of felt like that was just thrown in there. And I think if they had cut some of that stuff out, they could have had more of Rhodes and Stark's relationship in this movie, too. I felt that was a little to the side in this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another, I feel like when Tony would get into the suit, he had kind of like, you know, like that Under Armour style, like, jumpsuit, like, underneath. It was like Rhodes' big reveal. Like, he's like a military man. Like, in his big reveal, when he comes out of the armor, he's wearing, like, a green polo shirt. Like, he just came from, like, a golf tournament or something.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, he doesn't have some sort of official under the uniform outfit. Like, I found that to be a little weird.
It wasn't even practical either. I mean, I think if at least he was wearing Under Armour shirt and pants, it would have made more sense, because you're going to sweat in that thing, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's air conditioned. Maybe it is, but.
There were a lot of, like, the whole magic realism about the whole Iron Man. Like, I always thought, like, in the first movie, they made it abundantly clear that everything ran off of, like, the arc reactor in his chest.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second movie, Rhodey just walks into another armor. But what's powering that one? And
right.
what was powering like all 47 that apparently anybody can just jump into, like the president or that other guy or Pepper Potts, you know.
Yeah, I guess they want you to think that he built other arc reactors along the way and put them in the it built them into the suits somehow. I mean, I guess the only thing that would make sense because, you know, you also get the impression the arc reactor is what creates the unibeam itself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, right, I mean, no, I agree. It's like they never fully explained it, you know? So you kind of just have to take it, you know, take it at face value and say, oh, I guess he built them into the suit somehow.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you take the good with the bad.
Yeah.
Like all the comic book movies. I don't know. Are we trailing off or...
No,
we're getting too much into, I'm promoting the, I have no affiliation with Marvel or Iron Man, so.
So why don't you tell us then, tell people out there about, Omens.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I ever, did I give you a comic before you left?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. So I don't know if you read it or not. It's an independent book. Larry and I are both very influenced by Marvel and DC, mm-hmm. Superheroes, and I wouldn't quite say that this is a superhero book yet. Does have that kind of element. It's about mutation,
mm-hmm.
and kind of like not in a good way.
Right. I did read it. I mean, I read it when you gave it to me, and that would have been like 3 years ago. So
right. Yeah. Don't do that math, though. I don't want to know, like, because I'm still working on the second issue, but...
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Edit that out.
Okay.
No. No, it's true. It's about a girl, 17-year-old girl that thinks she's going crazy, but she's actually developing psychic powers.
Mm-hmm.
She's being trailed by mysterious figures, and she doesn't know if the people that are following her are like illusions because she's going crazy, or if they're villains or people there to help. And I don't believe you get all the answers in the first issue, but
no, you don't. It has an issue. It has a definite element of suspense.
Right.
You kind of feel like, you know, I kind of was wondering, was this going in a horror genre direction with it, you know? I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, for the people, like, you know, at conventions, I've kind of pitched that it's more of along the lines of like a sci-fi, you know?
Yeah, no, I could see that.
I think because of the cover, like people have gotten approached to do like horror conventions and things like that, or
mm-hmm.
somebody actually asked me to do the zombie convention and was like, you know, well, that's not really what the book's about.
No, and it's not, but
but there are big monsters chasing a girl on the cover of the book. You know, I get it. Like, It's a good book. I hope, you know, anybody that's read it, if you're listening, I hope you liked it. And if you didn't, I'm sorry.
Never apologize for your art.
Right. No. I was apologizing for the writing.
Oh, okay.
Larry, I hope you're not listening. But, yeah. I feel like we really put together something special. I would say if you have read it and you are listening to this, which are, I don't know what the odds of that are. if you have read it and you're listening to it, I'm sorry that it's taken me so long to get the second issue done. Hopefully, I guess I'll say this on your podcast, I'm hoping that I'll have something done, middle of the summer and published by the beginning of fall.
Okay.
Which is a hard goal still, but I, you know, I'm going to strive for my best.
How long does it take you to produce a page at this point?
Like at my best, I could do a page a day.
Okay.
But unfortunately, and that's penciled and inked. I want to at least try to do this one in color. The last one's black and white.
Right.
Either in color or like a grayscale version, almost like Walking Dead style.
Oh, okay.
With color covers, and obviously that takes a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say it takes me a day to do a cover, like, you know, I might be working on a couple hours a night, a couple nights a week. So, you know, unfortunately, I don't have like a full 8 hours to work on
right.
a comic book, you know.
Do you agonize over each drawing?
I don't know if I agonize. I know that, and I was told this at an early age, that on each page of the comic you should have one panel that's really like the best, like features almost like the best
mm-hmm.
of your work. And then there's possible that one panel maybe is not your best. So, there are things that have kind of like that. It's hard to look at your own work. I remember when the first issue came out, I was my biggest critic. You know, because everybody else is reading the story and they're looking at the art, and I'm looking at like, you know, a misspelling or like, why does that border look like that? You know, that type of thing. Like, you know, all that hand looks horrible.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember when I first started playing drums and I was in the orchestra at school and play a piece with the orchestra, and it's like, you know, I missed a couple notes here and there, and afterwards leaving, like my mom and dad are walking me out, and I'm like, oh, that was really bad. I kept messing up, and my father would always like, well, you didn't stop, you kept going, and no one noticed, and it sounded really good. Like,
right.
You know, no one, that all that stuff is, you know, in an artist's head, you know, we're always our own worst critics, you know?
Yeah.
And no, it's a great book, you know? I mean, I don't remember any mistakes like that in it.
No. I mean, yeah, like, an average reader is not looking for those types of things. Like,
right.
But... you know, I don't see this particularly as a negative thing. It's just like, you know, this is our first published book. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I want the second one to be 10 times better, and, you know, progressively, like, each one, you know, I want there to be, like, some sort of improvement.
Well, no, that's true, too. I mean, if you just put it out and say, oh, that was the greatest thing ever, then you're
then
not going to...
keep it. It's like your first book and you're retired from the industry, like...
Yes, yeah. You're not going to strive to do better. I can see that.
Yeah.
What about, what was the other book? I'm sorry, I can't remember.
The Believer?
The Believer.
I don't know if I gave you a copy of that.
No, I don't have a copy of that one. Is that,
Well, at the same time where Larry the Omens, he wrote The Omens... and I did all the art.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, Larry was working on a book that he wrote and drew.
Oh, okay.
And it's called The Believer. It came out at the same time, and I think the publishing for number two is going to be the same time as The Omens number two, which, you know, we're both hoping for, you know, sometime in summer. Also, I know you asked me about convention schedules. Mm-hmm. Like, I've just decided... somewhere after the wedding that I wasn't going to go to conventions until this book is done. Like,
okay.
You know, I've kind of run through all the smaller conventions that I've gone to, and until I get a second book to promote, like going back to the same thing with the same book, you know, it's kind of a hard sell. Like,
yeah,
you know, oh, you didn't buy my comic last time. Maybe try this singular comic. Or the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
And it's also like a motivator to get my, you know, I want to go to conventions and I want to promote, but
have to have something to do that with.
Right. So,
go ahead.
So I guess we'll see you at New York Comic Con in October, right? That's fall. You said you'd be done by fall.
Here's hoping. I know that everybody gets. I would love to go to New York Comic Con, but I've never been there other than just a person going. It's very hard to get into. Like, that's one of the few conventions that you have to apply to and get accepted.
Okay.
I have applied several times, and I've gotten rejected several times. I will probably apply again this year, and I will probably get rejected this year.
Okay. It's not a situation where you can just buy a table at this point?
Well, I believe that they could... There's Artist Alley. You apply for Artist Alley, and you either get in or you don't get in, but then they try to sell you options. And Artist Alley is very expensive. I'm not going to mention prices.
Mm-hmm.
But if anybody is listening to this that has gotten a table, they know that you pay a lot to go there. Not that it's not good press, and hopefully you'll make that money back. But and then they kind of do like, you could buy a table on the floor or something like that. Oh. But I've never gone for that option. Like, I would like to get into Artist Alley someday. But,
definitely. I mean, that's...
I've never gone the route of trying to buy it, because that's a lot of money. Like, publishing the comic was a lot of money, too. But...
Yeah, well, I mean, Artist Alley, too, is where all of your peeps, as it were, are,
Right.
Are the people you want to talk to and network with. So, right. I definitely see that.
Do you, I don't think I've ever seen you at New York Comic Con.
I was actually there last year. I was actually working with, a company called Focused Attention, and,
Yeah,
they work with all the different celebrities, so, I was kind of like a floater on Friday, and then Saturday I was doing, I was working with, the people from Teen Wolf, and, just walking them to their panels and those kinds of things, and, the people from, Lost Girl.
Oh, okay.
And then on Sunday, I got to live out my, one of my childhood fantasies and worked with Carrie Fisher.
Wow.
And, yeah, she was actually, one of the nicest celebrities I've ever worked with at a con, too. And it was,
yeah.
It was just a great experience. I mean, a lot of people say things about her, but they don't know her. I'm not saying I know her, but I spent a day with her and I understand her a little bit now, and, when people say, oh, she's nuts, it's like, well, no, she has problems, but she's not nuts. And,
yeah. Everybody gets problems.
Yeah.
Everybody's got problems.
Yes.
When we were at the Big Apple Con, you had a pretty good gig, too.
Oh, yeah, Mike Hogan. Yeah, that was that was fun.
I originally was on line control, which I believe is where they send all the first-year volunteers.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, is this... I would probably say that's... the shittiest job. I don't know if I can say it on your podcast, but
that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. Which is, it's rightfully so, but, and I think I was just doing a walkthrough at one point and they were trying to find me a placement and, some lady asked me to help her hang a sign in her booth.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was, what was her name? Erin Gray?
Yes.
Buck Rogers?
Yes.
And I guess she represents a lot of people, and she seemed to think that I had a head on my shoulders and asked me if I wanted to work with her clients, and I was like, yeah, absolutely. And I kind of told the guy, I was like, am I allowed to do this? Like, shouldn't I be in line control? And he's basically like, don't complain about getting out of line control. Like, but the person I was in charge of was... Helen Slater.
Right.
A.K.A. Supergirl.
Yes.
And
a lot of us were jealous.
Yeah. That was a great day. She also was very nice. Very nice. She was always worried that I was standing too long. And, you know, she always offered to get me a chair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have taken a bullet for her that day. Had it been. But she was very polite and very cordial, and she was very nice to everybody that came up to her booth.
Yes. Oh, Erin. Oh, man. There's another one. That's a funny story.
Yeah.
She was another one that was one of my, when I was a kid, crushes.
And, oh, yeah. No, I remember Buck Rogers when I was a kid.
Yeah. I even watched Silver Spoons because of her.
Oh, yeah. She was on that.
And, you know, it's funny because I actually haven't talked to her in a long time. I think probably since my friend Spat stopped working at Wizard. But he actually, I wouldn't say they're friends, but they definitely have a working relationship. And she was at his 40th birthday party, and I was there. And that was just a surreal experience for me, you know, because it was like, it's like, you know, it was kind of like stepping into that world a little bit further, you know, and it's like, what do you do when you're like sitting at a table with somebody you had a crush on, you know? And that's actually funny is that I emailed the company that she works for or that she owns and had a question about something, and she actually responded and said she remembered me and asked how I was doing, and it was like, wow, this is really weird, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, no, it's like I say to people, volunteering's fun, you know? Like, if you want to get into a con and experience it from the other side, you know, get your foot in the door and volunteer, because as you just pointed out, you worked with Supergirl, I worked with Colonel Hogan, and Princess Leia, you know, it's, you know...
All on a whim, like, you know...
Yeah.
It was certainly an experience. You know, you get onto the floor before it gets crowded. I don't know, like, I would think that, like, being a volunteer at New York Comic Con would probably be one of the best volunteer con jobs you could get. Like,
yeah,
I know as a participant, it gets so crowded there that I don't know what that company's like. You know, we did the one that was Wizard, but
right. And I didn't actually. I mean, again, I was working with Focused Attention. So I wasn't working directly with New York Comic Con. So it was probably a much easier gig because I just had to show up, you know, when the show started, you know, as you're probably aware, celebrities at cons, get there when it opens and they don't stay till it closes. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a lot lighter in that way. I don't have to deal with line control. The volunteers do that. This is just, you know, getting the celebrities things that they need, walking them back and forth to their panels, you know, standing at their table and telling people how much things cost if they have questions or those kinds of things, which is a much easier job because on the flip side, you have the volunteers who are working on the floor or outside dealing with line control. New York Comic Con is huge. I don't know if it's probably the biggest one on the East Coast right now after Dragon Con. And I have to imagine it's a really long day for all those guys. You know?
Yeah. Don't you think I've never been to Dragon Con, but I thought it was the biggest other than, San Diego.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I said on the East Coast after, that's in Atlanta, so after that it's probably New York. But yeah, number one is probably still San Diego.
But you think Dragon Con's number two is what you're saying?
I think so. I mean, not having ever gone, but I've seen plenty of photos. I've seen plenty of online videos. And, I mean, it's wall-to-wall people in the hotels. It's got to be nuts. I mean, it's five hotels that get sold out,
yeah,
you know, every year. I can't imagine the volunteers there survive the weekend, working all the whole weekend. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with Wizard is, not to speak ill of them, because I've done a lot of great shows with them, but you know, there's the handful of us that volunteer for the entire weekend and are there from opening to close the entire weekend, and then there's the ones that come in, they just want to get on the floor for free, and then they disappear. Right. And, you know, we work really hard, the handful of us that do it, and they don't really get enough people that are willing to do that. So I can't imagine other cons like Dragon Con do that. There has to be shifts. You know, it has to be like, all right, you're going to work from open till noon, and then we have a crew that comes in from noon till close, and, you know, yeah, do that all day, because, you know, that those shows are the same thing with San Diego. And, you know, I have friends who've volunteered at New York. I'll have to ask them if that's how that works, because I can't. You would go insane having
right.
to deal with that many people all day long. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I guess, you know, you get what you pay for, too.
Well, that's true. You didn't pay to get him come in, so here's what you got to deal
right.
with.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not paying to come in your convention, and you're not paying me to work your convention, so let's come to some sort of agreement.
Right.
And that's how the Comic Con volunteer, like, began, I guess, so.
Yeah, and, you know, again, for those, you know, for those who are listening, my brother does a podcast, too, and I was on there a few months ago talking about volunteering, and, you know, I said this on there, and I'm saying it again, you know, definitely go and volunteer. I think the greatest thing that actually has happened to me wasn't at New York Comic Con, it was last year. There's this small show, Mike Carbonara, do you know the name? He's the guy who started Big Apple and then sold it to Wizard. He now does a one-day show called New York Comic Book Marketplace.
Right.
And so I've done that show for the last 3 years. Last year, you know, he got Stan Lee.
Oh, wow.
And,
sorry.
Is that your phone?
Yeah, that's my mom's calling.
Oh, okay.
Can't talk now, Mom. I'm on a podcast. Continue.
Okay, so Mike got Stan Lee, which, you know, was his, like, his lifetime goal to have him at a con, and my friend Spat is the coordinator for the show, and you know, of course, he asked me if I was volunteering, and I said, Stan's going to be there, you're kidding, right? And so we got there, we're setting up, and Spat walks over and he's like, I need a volunteer. And he's like looking around. And he's like, oh, wait, I'm sorry. This is a job for you. And he points at me and I'm like, okay. And he takes me over and, he had me working at Stanley's table all day.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was like, it was unbelievable. You know, I mean, and then, you know, he had me, I got a picture with him, and, I actually hung out in the lobby with him while he was waiting for his cab. And that's when I really got to talk to him, like, because what my job was at the table is people bring anything you can imagine for Stan Lee to sign, statues, their arms, busts, you know, comics, and basically anything that was, like, too heavy for Stan to hand back over, you know, I grabbed and, you know, just moved out of the way so the next person could come in. So I didn't really get to talk to him because the line was constantly there, and it was afterwards, you know, waiting for his cab, I got to talk to him for a little while, and, you know, he's everything I hoped he would ever be. You know, he's sweet, humble, just a really nice guy. You know, it's, the brother's co-host, Sean, said, you know, he's the kind of guy who knows the right thing to say every time, and it's true, you know, but you don't get the feeling like he's just saying that because he thinks you want to hear it. Like, he really means it, you know?
Right.
You know, I told him basically why I'm into comic books, and which is, you know, when I was a kid, I was bullied. So it was a form of escapism, you know?
Yeah.
And I really identified with Peter Parker, you know, the kid who had the hard time in life, and he got bit by a radioactive spider and all that, and he, you know, he just turned to me and he had the most sincere look on his face and he goes, well, I'm guessing, you know, you always felt like you always wanted to be bitten by that radioactive spider. you know, and it was just like, it was just what I needed to hear in that moment, you know, and it was just perfect, you know, and that's, as I said, you know, that was my moment with Stan, and no one can ever take that away from me, and that's all from, you know, volunteering, like, starting out, whatever, I think it's been 6 years now I've been volunteering, and,
wow,
and, you know, just doing a good job and getting noticed by the right people and making the right friends and, you know, getting to a position where, you know, I'm at a smaller con and, you know, a friend is coordinating it and he goes, hey, you know what? I'm putting you at Stan's table because I know how much of a fan you are, you know?
Right.
And, but that's the thing. It's not going to be the first time you volunteer and you have to work hard to earn it. But if you earn it, it's well worth it, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, I guess it's the same as an artist too, like, I would say that I'm not doing big business at the conventions I go to,
mm-hmm.
but certainly, like, the connections, like, I've been to some of the smallest conventions, like, in the area. I live in Albany.
Right.
And I kind of go, like, a 3-hour radius. And, like, the smallest connection, you just meet somebody or they're at the table next to you, can be, like, the biggest, like, you know, they can help you out so much.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just by being a fan of your work, like, encouraging you or even, like, promotions and things like that. Like, you know, I guess, you know, kind of what you're saying is, like, you enjoy the little things.
Right, yes. Yeah, and because you don't know where they're going to lead. And, you know, I mean, it's part of, you know, it's the reason that, it's so funny because, like, you know, I'm starting out with this podcast, but, you know, I am having you on here because I want to promote your work. You know, I think you're doing good work. You're a nice guy. You deserve all the breaks you can get, you know. But it's also not just that. It's, I had this, our second episode, interviewed another artist from New York. He goes by Calmix, Calmix is his name. And
I listened to a little bit of that today.
Okay, and great guy, you know, a few years older than me, very, very similar backgrounds. And what, you know, on the episode I said this, and I truly mean this, it's part of me, I'd rather talk to the independent guys. I'd rather have the small press artists because they're the ones that are really hungry and they're still passionate about it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I met George Perez. Well, I met George Perez last year, but I worked at his table a little bit this year at that same show.
Yeah.
Sweet guy, you know, really nice. But he's got a super long line and he's doing a drawing for every person. And, you know, he'll talk to you, but, you know, you're going to say to him, oh, I really liked your work on this Teen Titans, or, oh, I really loved this Avengers issue. And you're not going to sit there and say, you know, what inspires you to draw? What, you know, people aren't asking him those questions. What's your drive? You know, why do you love this so much? Because he's kind of past that at this point in his career, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess we didn't really get into that too much with you. I mean, you told me you went to art school, but you know, what is your drive in comic books? Why do you love the medium? Like, when did you get started loving it and decided that's what you wanted to do?
Well, I think I always loved cartoons and television as a young age. I loved to draw. I'd never really thought about comics. I had some as a kid. I loved Spider-Man and cartoons and things like that that were on, but I never really, like, that converted to comics very quickly for me. I believe it was when I was in eighth grade, 1989.
Okay.
My cousin came over the house, and he and my aunt were going to take me to go see this movie, Batman. And, like, I was a comic book fan when I came out of that movie.
Okay.
And I have been reading ever since. And that whole conversion, I thought what I wanted to do was to make cartoons, but that all went straight to comic books. I knew that that's what I wanted to do with my life.
Oh, go ahead.
It's funny that you say that because I think the 1989 Batman did that for a lot of kids that maybe weren't comic book fans. When they saw that movie, they ran out and started buying comic books, you know, started buying, reading Batman, and then they saw, oh, who's, you know, let me read Superman. Oh, I know him. Oh, look, there's Spider-Man. Let me see what he's up to. And it's funny because you don't hear that today from the industry. You're not hearing, oh, people went and saw the Avengers and Avengers sales shot up. It was people went and saw the Avengers and went and bought the Blu-ray.
Yeah. You know? No, it's true. A lot of conventions for an artist in Artist Alley, like a lot of conventions now, are filled with people that love the characters and love the movies, but maybe, I don't know what the percentage of, a lot of people just aren't reading comics.
Yeah.
It's hard to get them interested in those, like, these characters that aren't like movie characters.
It's just the way people, I think, you know, and young people especially, consume media nowadays. It's, and I've mentioned this on the podcast a couple times already too. It's disposable media now. I mean, not to say comic books aren't disposable, but there's a definite collector's, mentality. I mean, I'm sitting here in my home office and I've got, you know, like 9 long boxes and 3 short boxes, you know, that's, you know, my collection and people don't, it seems like people don't want that anymore. You know, that's why digital comics, maybe they aren't really taking off, but they're getting bigger and bigger. And you know, it's just because people want to, you know, open up their iPad, read the book, consume the media and say, okay, what's next, and get rid of it. You know, they're not into that aspect anymore. And it's a shame, you know. There was an interesting article, Joe Quesada actually tweeted it today, and I was reading it this afternoon, that I can't remember the guy's name, but he writes for the Wall Street Post, and he's basically, you know, he keeps touting that the comic book industry is dying. It's the end is nigh is basically what he's saying. And, you know, in the same time, Marvel and DC are saying, oh, no, we're having bigger sales than we've had in a decade. But they're having bigger sales, but they're not necessarily getting new followers.
Yeah.
You know, like they have they did the new 52 over DC, and that was a big sales thing. But I think it was more of the gimmick of everyone went out and bought 52 number ones.
Right.
You know, but did everyone continue reading 52 different storylines? No. You know, maybe people kept up with the Batman, some people kept up with Superman, and some people kept up with Wonder Woman, but no one.
I only bought the Justice League.
There you go, right? And that, they didn't do the Justice League right away, did they? They took a while.
I don't know. I think it might have been one of the first. It was like the Jim Lee one that Johns wrote.
Okay, maybe there was a JLA then that came out just recently.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. The one with all the flag covers?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of, okay. But, yeah, so, and that's another one. Like, you know, people probably ran out and bought, like, at least the basic cover and the one for their state, you know?
Right. So, no, I didn't read that book, but I bought the one with the West Virginia cover on it. So.
There you go, exactly.
Guilty as charged. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know. What do you read now?
You know,
like,
it's
really read.
Really read.
What are you excited about?
Actually, what I really get excited about isn't even a comic book anymore. It's Jim. You know, if you're familiar with Jim Butcher.
I don't think so.
He writes a series called The Dresden Files. There was actually a short-lived sci-fi series.
Yeah, I remember the show. Okay. I watched, like, an episode of it.
Okay, the show is nothing like the books, as it usually is with TV.
Right. So it was a book first?
Oh, yeah.
I
believe it's the 15th book in the series at this point. He's planning to do 20 altogether. And, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a book I fell in love with, and, you know, I think it was on the 5th book when I started the series, and I read all 5 within, you know, a few months, and then now it's like, maybe once a year he comes out with a book, and it's just that waiting, you know, sitting there waiting right. for the next one to come out. Comic book wise, you know, I had gotten out of collecting, and then Civil War came out. And I think a lot of people were in this boat. It was like, it was such a well done story. It really was, in my mind. And, you know, that got me back in. And so, it was Civil War and Spider-Man, because it's always been Spider-Man with me.
Right. Me too.
And, you know, I actually got a subscription, last year, I believe it was. And I was all in. I was still buying the books even after the subscription ran out. And then number 700 came, and it was like, really? It was just felt like such a stunt, killing him off, and then switching him with Doc Ock, and then starting the Superior Spider-Man. It was just like,
yeah.
Of all the ways to end the title, too, it was just like, I can't do it, you know? Now,
well, I mean, it feels like a stunt because it is a stunt.
Right. You know? And I know a couple of people are reading the Superior Spider-Man. They kind of like some of the stuff going on. But at the same time, like, you know, it's still not the same. It's not what Stan Lee created, you know?
Sure.
So, I've kind of fallen out. It's funny, though, is I still buy at my local shop. They'll do every once in a while, like, they'll do specials where you can, cause I'm a member there, so they have a dollar bin. They have a lot of back issues that are dollar, but... they'll do a thing where you can fill a short box for $10.
Right.
You know, so I do that, you know. And it's funny because I kind of, through that, I discovered The Defenders, which was an old series from the 70s that Marvel did. It was a team book.
Yeah.
Which had the Silver Surfer, the Incredible Hulk, Doctor Strange, Valkyrie, and... I can't think of the other character's name. But it's done where they handle all the weird stuff the Avengers don't touch,
uh-huh.
you know, and it was a fun book, you know, and I can see why it didn't last and why it was only, you know, I don't think it lasted maybe 5 years. And it was also a group of characters that you don't think of being in a team, you know,
right,
and teaming
right.
up. But, like, I had discovered that, you know, so I've read a lot of those.
Yeah.
You know, I think another one of my guilty pleasures is Power Man and Iron Fist, and I keep saying, why won't they make a Power Man and Iron Fist movie? I would go see that in a heartbeat, you know?
What was the three characters that came back, like Daredevil and Ghost Rider and the Punisher? They all came back to, I guess, Disney now? Like,
and Blade.
Oh, Blade, yeah. I would love to see a movie with Ghost Rider and Blade and throw the Punisher in there. Like, just like them together, for no reason, just other than...
Yeah, I think Marvel has a definite plan at this point. I mean, they said, you know, Phase 2 and then Phase 3, but I think once they start getting near the end of Phase 3, they'll probably start throwing out little movies like that, and that would be great, you know? I mean... You could definitely reboot the Blade series at that point, you know. Yeah. Maybe they could do justice to Ghost Rider. Not that they didn't try to do justice to it, but, you know, it got real campy quickly. maybe Nick Cage wasn't the best choice to be the Johnny Blaze. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're really... I don't think they're going to be in a rush to make, like, another... Ghost Rider or another Punisher, you know.
Yeah. Punisher's tough because, you know, it's a very extremely dark character, extremely brutal character, right? So to do it justice, you almost have to have an R-rated movie. And no one really wants that in a comic book movie, you know?
Uh-huh.
So you have to skirt that line, you know, like... You know, because Batman's dark, but he doesn't kill anyone. You know, this guy goes around killing people. You know, maybe once they get Spider-Man back, they can do the Punisher chasing down Spider-Man, which, you know, is one of the greatest storylines from the comic book.
Yeah, no, that's true. But, I mean, they're probably not going to put, like, a billion-dollar character in the movie with a million-dollar character, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
As much as you would want to see it and as cool as it would be, like, I don't know, like, they're businessmen, you know?
Right. And I think one of the issues, too, is that you'll have the same issue you have in every team-up book ever written, where you have these two characters who get together, and all the reader wants, at least in the comic book verse, is they want to see them fight. You know, so there's always that misunderstanding at first. They fight, and then all of a sudden the enemy pops up halfway through, and then they have to team up and you know, fight this enemy together, and maybe they realize along the way they're not so different, you know? And it's, you can only do so many of those movies, I think, you know? You know, but Ghost Rider and Blade together, that could be a very interesting movie, you know? Yeah. You know, you should pitch that. You should, you and Larry should write it and
submit like, that. Spirits of Vengeance?
Right.
Yeah, I like it.
And then you, but you guys write it and pitch it to Marvel and see what happens.
Yeah, I'll get right on that. I'm sure they'll love it.
Why not? You know, you have to believe in yourself before.
Right.
They're my words of wisdom for the evening.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to get blamed for when it's bad. Yeah. I'd much rather see a bad version than to see like a bad version that you wrote and then you're like have to pretend like it was really good.
Yeah, like, I guess that's the corner that they all have painted themselves in, you know. The moment they release a bad one, it's like, oh, that stunk. Oh yeah, we're sorry.
Right.
I have a bad feeling about the Wolverine. You know, I don't know. I'm starting to get to the point where I'm a little tired of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
I don't know. There's something about this one that seems more appealing to me than the Weapon X one, which I didn't see until it came out on video.
Okay.
But it seems like I probably will see this one. I understand what you're saying about the Hugh Jackman thing. I think, like, focusing all the X-Men movies on him is kind of like where those movies kind of trailed off.
Right, right.
You know.
Oh, and no, don't get me wrong. They're going to get my money. I'm going to go see
it.
Just not as excited as I was, you know, when I first saw him as Wolverine, you know?
Yeah, I got you.
So. All right, well.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know, it's we've been talking for a good hour now.
Jeez Louise.
Yes.
Sorry to talk your ear off.
Oh, no. This is fine, you know.
Right.
So I was at this point, I would just ask, you know, when we talked about your books, is there anything other than issue 2 coming up that maybe you want to promote from your company?
Let's see. Well, I mentioned a podcast that hopefully we'll be announcing soon. I guess I could say already the title is called The Bat.
Okay.
And it's written and drawn by a good friend of mine, Joel Janitz. There won't be any info about that yet, hopefully soon, but if you go to the website, it's www.electromagneticpress.com. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that info will be on there soon.
Okay, and as soon as you get the info, shoot it off to me, and I'll put it on my website as well.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to do that the same for you. If anybody's on Facebook, if you go to facebook.com/electromagneticpress, that's our fan page. Most of the updating will go through that and the website, but, you know, it's best to check the Facebook as well.
Okay. Yeah, same thing. Same thing with you guys that are out there listening, because I'm getting people listening, but we're not getting likes on Facebook. So if you go to Facebook.com/SuperheroSpeak, you can like us there, and SuperheroSpeak.com, that's our website. You can also get to we're at SuperheroSpeak on Twitter. But yeah, it's like I said in the beginning, I'm having a hard time figuring out Twitter because I keep telling people we're out there.
Right. Yeah, you know, hopefully the handful of people that follow my Facebook page will follow your Facebook page and vice versa.
Right.
So
sounds good.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, no, thank you for doing it. And, you know, maybe when the book is done, I'll have you back on so you can promote that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And maybe it'll be after the Superman movie we can talk about that.
Oh, there you go. All right. So for everyone listening, don't let your cape get caught in the door.